Thank you, Eric. Thanks for, can everyone hear me? Everyone? Thanks for having me. One of the things I usually, well, it's interesting to see so many young folks here, and I feel your pain. If sitting for 45 minutes is bad enough, but you're going to have to do that maybe five times. If you're like me, it's going to be rough as it is. Here's one of the things that I usually tell my students, especially if we're going to be talking about theology or philosophy or things like that, it's really helpful to in order to focus your attention and your thoughts by writing things down. If you have a piece of paper, even if you're going to throw away the notes later, what it's super helpful to just go ahead and jot things down as we go. It keeps you at the very least, it keeps you awake. So just keep that in mind as we go through. We have five lectures, and they're meant to be listened to without having to hear the other ones, but they also kind of follow a theme and an order. There's a method to my madness. The first one today is, this first one talks about, we're going to talk about more of a big picture philosophy kind of questions. I mean, I hope to bring it down to make it concrete, but it's going to be, we're going to look at how we know things, and particularly how we come to believe in the Lord Jesus. So let's go ahead and get started. So the title is, Does Belief in God Need Evidence? This is something, I mean, as you heard, I used to be an engineer, and now I'm not. I went back to school to study philosophy, and one of the reasons, and the reason, was basically the topic of our conference, apologetics, defending the faith. And how I got into it was I was struggling with a lot of the questions, things like, How does science and the Bible, how do those relate? Or how, you know, I had questions about, that ended up being about philosophy. How does that relate to my faith? And there were a lot, I had a lot of doubts. And that's how I got into the philosophy side. And so it wasn't because I just liked to think deep thoughts. And I've over the years, I've come into contact with a lot of philosophers, and a lot of them just like to think, because that's just what they're into. Mine, this is much more practical to me, and it's very, very central to the kingdom. Think about what might be the worst thing that could happen to you or someone you loved, like your children. And your mind can go to all a number of things. But for me, usually what it goes back to is the worst thing that could happen is to lose either my faith or for my loved ones to lose their faith. So, and that's what we're talking about. When we talk about apologetics, we're talking about defending the faith. And now that sounds abstract. It shouldn't be. We're talking about defending people. Really, I mean, the faith itself, Jesus doesn't necessarily need to be defended. He can take care of himself, right? When we're doing this, we're talking about us. We're talking about those around us. This is the most important thing in our lives here. And when we talk about apologetics, we're talking about defending against attacks from that. And so that's what, I just want you to keep that in mind. Another thing I want you to keep in mind, too, I'll be talking about unbelievers, about what famous atheists say and things like that. What I want us to keep in mind is that the enemy isn't so much the unbeliever. It's unbelief. And we need to be very careful about how we treat unbelievers. So a lot of apologists can have this attitude that when they're attacking ideas or defending their faith against ideas, they attack the person. And it's hard to figure out when that's appropriate, when that's not. But I want us to remember we're to love our neighbors, love our enemies. And so when I'm talking about these unbelievers and I'm talking about what they say, don't get caught up in try not to get angry. If there's something that I say about them, you say, they said that? You know, and it's hard not to do, but I want you to just keep that in mind. Okay. Now, we're talking about apologetics, about defending the faith. By the way, I'll be looking at my watch. It's not because I have someplace better to be and that I need to get there. It's because I want to keep in mind my time and love my neighbor, not go over. Okay. So when it comes to defending our faith, that presupposes attacks, right? So we have a lot of attacks coming from contemporary culture. Some of them are pretty subtle. Some of them just kind of go right through our defenses. Some of them are in your face, straight no chaser kind of attacks. Those are the kind that I'm going to be dealing with today. And basically, let's make it very clear. There are basically three main attacks on the faith today. The first one is belief in God is irrational. So that's number one. Belief in God is irrational. The second is science has shown that there is no God. The third is evil and suffering have shown that there's no God. That's often called the problem of evil. So there's belief in God is irrational, science has shown that there's no God, and evil and suffering has shown that there's no God. You can do a lot of damage with just these three. We'll focus, in this talk, I'll focus on the first one. Is belief in God rational? The rest of the talks that we'll have today will focus more on the second one. Does science show that there's no God? What would it take for science to do that? And we won't really talk about the third one. I hope to do that maybe tomorrow at during Sunday school. So let's focus on this notion of whether belief in God is reasonable or rational. The thing that we want to do right now is to step back and say, okay, what is the exact objection? What's the problem here? Why would you think that belief in God is irrational? I mean, if you don't come into contact with any unbelievers, I mean, you could go your whole life not even considering that question. So why would someone think that? And what exactly is the claim? Well, think of it this way. What if I said to you, okay, right now, I make some comment and say, look, right now the president is riding his tricycle in the Oval Office. Okay, just something wild, something off the, right now, it's about 9:30, he's riding his tricycle in the Oval Office. And you go, you doubt that, rightly. And you say, why do you believe that? And I say, no reason, I just do. So you would, I dare say, think that there was something wrong with me. It's like, you have no reason at all for believing that. No, I just think that that's what he's doing. You would like some sort of evidence for my belief, right? You would like some sort of support. Now, you're going to think I'm behaving irrationally. There's going to be there's something wrong with me, and you're certainly not going to believe that that the president's riding a tricycle in the Oval Office. Now, this is exactly or very similar to the kind of claim that atheists are making. It's like, look, you say you believe in God, or the Easter Bunny, or whatever. Why? And unless you have an answer, unless you can say, well, here's why. Let me give you this argument. you're irrational. I want to look at that. Is that a couple of questions we need to flesh out here? But let's see, what exactly is being asked for if someone says, well, wait, why do you believe that? And what is when an atheist says, look, or an unbeliever says, look, you're irrational for believing in God, what is it that is actually being claimed specifically? Well, look what in the president case, and when for writing the tricycle, you're looking for some reason for me believing that wild claim. Now, what if I came up with something like this? Well, I read in the Washington Post that the president's having his niece, little niece, over for her birthday, and they're going to have a party in the Oval Office, taxpayers' dollars and all that. And then what's going to happen is they're going to have this. The niece likes to see Uncle Barack ride around on his bicycle, and it's going to happen about 9:30 on. Washington Post reports this, and I go on to say, look, and the Washington Post is usually right on these sorts of things. Now I start giving you some evidence for believing that. It wasn't, I was just like, I don't know, I just made it up, or I have no reason to believe it. I've given you some evidence, right, some reason to believe. Now notice what I want you to see here is, what I've done is I've given you, very roughly, an argument. Okay? An argument. And I don't mean an argument like when you bicker amongst siblings and things like that. I mean, an argument is just something, we're using it in a technical sense. Let me give you the classic case of, the classic example of an argument. All men are mortal. Socrates is a man. Therefore, Socrates is mortal. Okay? That we have here, we have two what are called premises, two premises and a conclusion. Anyways, it's an argument, and that's how we support our beliefs. Oftentimes, we have some sort of argument. So that's what I gave you before when I said the Washington Post. The Washington Post has told me this, and they're usually reliable. I'm giving you some premises that support my conclusion that the president's riding a tricycle in the Oval Office. Okay. Oh, by the way, what if I had said, all men are mortal, Jesus is a man, therefore Jesus is mortal? I usually ask my students that and see what they say. It's like, some of them freak out, some of them don't. I'll just leave that to you. You can freak out if you want. But here's the thing. What atheists are saying is they're saying it is irrational to believe in God because there are no good arguments for that. So the conclusion, they're looking for an argument that has as its conclusion, God exists or something like that. Okay? And if you don't have one, you're irrational. Now, there's two questions here. The first one is, why think that there are no good arguments for God's existence? I mean, that's one question. The other is, suppose there were no arguments at all, no good arguments. Why think that that is a bad thing? The first one, we're not going to deal so much with. I'm not going to talk so much about whether or not there are good arguments for God's existence. I think there are. But what I want to talk about now is, do you really need an argument in order to be rational when you believe in God? Now, here's the thing. You might think, well, this doesn't affect me. I just want to love the Lord, and I've never had these questions before. I don't know anyone who has. Let me make this a little more personal. Most likely, I mean, think about why you believe. How you came to believe in the Lord Jesus. Did you start, first of all, not believing? So you're an atheist. You don't believe in God. Or you're not sure. And then you run through some arguments. You investigate, okay, are there any good arguments for God's existence? And you come across at least one, and you go, dang, that's a good argument. I'm going to believe in God now. So you've gone from unbelief to belief, and the way you've done that is by way of an argument. Almost no one believes that way. And that's the problem. This is the problem that atheists and unbelievers of all stripes will point out. They'll say, look, you didn't come to believe by way of an argument. You know, you were brought up that way, or you believe by faith, or whatever it is, you don't have an argument. And therefore, you're irrational. Now, here's the point. Usually, they're absolutely right in this sense. We don't believe by way of an argument. The question now is that a problem? Well, it seems like it's a problem in the President Tricycle case, right? I mean, if I didn't have an argument, you know, first I didn't believe that the president's riding a tricycle, then I come to believe that, but there was nothing, there was no argument or reasoning in between, or if there wasn't, I would be behaving irrationally, all right? And if that's what's going on when it comes to belief in God, maybe there is something wrong here. So I want to look at that. By the way, there are people who do, I mean, you may have even read about them. C.S. Lewis, for example, came to belief by way of arguments, at least generally. I think it's a lot more complicated than just an argument being, you know, reading an argument and believing. But by and large, he did believe by way of an argument. So it does happen, and God can use those, no doubt. But think about it this way. If someone asks you, and I want you to be careful about this question, why do you believe in God? Or why do you believe in Jesus? There are two, sometimes we can get, we know, we can feel the pressure of that question. And we start scrambling for reasons. Because you don't want to say, well, that's the way I was brought up. And you know what? Most of the time, you know that's not going to fly, or you're going to get flack for that. So here's the thing. You need to be careful about what sorts of questions, you know, when you think of that question, why do you believe? You need to figure out, okay, am I going to answer in the sense, do they want a question, do they want to know why they should believe? Do they want to know what caused me to believe? Do they want me to provide some arguments for why someone else should believe? Those are a lot of questions that are going on in the background, and you just have to be careful. Right now, what I want you to think about is what caused you to believe? And by and large, there's going to be few of you who have come to believe by way of an argument. And what I want to do, obviously, I mean, this is the punchline. I mean, hopefully you know this is where I'm going. I'm going to be arguing that it's okay, that you're perfectly within your rational, intellectual rights to believe in God without an argument. So here's what I want to do. What I want to do is I want to basically take we'll do this in two steps. First, I want to look at how we know things in general. Are there any times when we can believe something without an argument and yet still be rational? Just in order, you know, things that we... You, me, the unbeliever, that we can all agree on. It's like, yeah, we believe that. There are things we believe without an argument, and we're rational for doing that. That's the first step. Then what I want to do is show that belief in God can be similar to those ordinary cases where we believe without argument. and rationally so. Okay? Those are the two steps. So let's do the first one. When it comes to the first step, when we look at just the way you ordinarily believe things around you, do you have an argument every time you believe something? Well, in fact, you don't have an argument for most of what you believe. And let me say this more. You know, that doesn't sound as crazy as this. Oftentimes, you don't have a reason for what you believe. Notice what I'm doing there, though. You got to be very careful about the way you use the terms reason and argument. But oftentimes, when someone said there's no good reason for this or that, they're really saying there's no argument for it. And that's what we're looking at. We've narrowed this down. We've seen, okay, what the person usually means by reason or evidence is an argument. Now, what we're doing is we're seeing, can we believe in things, anything at all, without an argument and still be rational? Well, think about sense perception. Okay, so there are some pews here with some people, and I believe that. Okay, I mean, hopefully you're not surprised. Now, did I believe it by way of an argument? Did I say, you know what, I'm seeing things, shapes that appear to be pew-like and people-like, and generally from this distance, my eyesight is reliable in this kind of lighting, and therefore, there probably are really people and pews. Do you know how, if I formed all of my beliefs like that, and this is the part, and when I'm teaching a class, I usually just take something, I'll take a marker and throw it at one of the students, and they'll catch it, and I'll say, hey, did you, and they usually catch it. You know, before, imagine if you had to form an argument in order to believe that there was a marker coming at your head. It would just bounce right off your head. Or if you're walking across the street and you need to form an argument in your mind before you believe that you should stop because of that bus, you wouldn't make it long, right? There's just no way. Life comes at us too fast and too hard to have to form an argument for everything that we believe. We just automatically believe, thankfully. What a gift. We automatically believe that, you know, there's a cup in front of you, there are people in front of you, whatever it is, you automatically believe it. You don't have to form an argument, and you're rational. Now, okay, so there's one case in which you're rational and in believing something and you don't have an argument. Okay? What about your memory? Same thing. Okay, so I had coffee this morning. Now, did I run through an argument in order to just believe, access that memory belief and believe it? Did I say, you know, I kind of have that, you know, memory type feel internally that seems to indicate that I had some coffee? And usually breakfast memories are pretty accurate, and therefore I mean, come on, I don't do that. I just remember I had coffee. Now, that doesn't mean that it's my, especially as I get older, I know not to trust my memory as much as I used to. But I mean, at least at this stage, I can trust breakfast beliefs. That may not be, you know, I might not be able to do that for long, but for now I can. And I'm perfectly rational believing that I had coffee. No argument whatsoever. Now, okay, so we've talked about sense perception, we've talked about memory. Let's one last thing, and then we'll stop talking about philosophy. Reason. Okay, reason. Think about this. When it comes to reason, just think logic. Remember the Socrates argument. All men are mortal, Socrates is a man, therefore Socrates is mortal. Now, that's a simple one. You instantly know that, hey, yeah, if the premises are true, the conclusion is true. I mean, you saw that as a legitimate argument, right? And you saw it almost instantly. Now, what if I said, if I asked you, why do you think that that's a good argument? What are you going to do? Are you going to give me an argument? Provide me with reasons for thinking that, oh, by the way, it's a categorical syllogism. That's just a fancy technical term for, you know, the type of argument it is. What if I said, how do you know that categorical syllogisms are legitimate? And you said, well, here, let me reason through with you. And what would you be using? You'd be using logic. And you'd be using logic to argue that logic is legitimate. That's often called in the business arguing in a circle or question begging. You can't do that. That's not legitimate. Well, how do I know? Well, let me give you, no, I'm just, you could go on forever. And this is what philosophers will do, and they'll just spit, you know, you'll see them just chasing their tail, and that's when you walk away. So we have these really fundamental, and think about how much sense perception, reason, memory, those make up so many of our beliefs, and yet we believe them time and time again without an argument, and we're rational for doing so. Now, I didn't say, and again, I don't mean infallible, but I do mean that we're rational. Those, we'll call them cognitive faculties, what those things in our minds that form our beliefs. That could be sense perception, memory, all of that. Those cognitive faculties are reliable. Now, what if you could say this? Well, okay, we don't normally give arguments for those beliefs, but we could if we wanted to. You know what? Actually, we couldn't. Any argument that you would give me that would argue that your senses are reliable would depend on those senses. Think about the case where, you know, you have this often in science fiction movies. Hapless people are hooked up to some computer. They're being used as batteries or something like that. But they're hooked up, their brains and their minds are hooked up to some computer. They're in some sort of stasis or something, but they're experiencing in their minds everything that we are. This is the whole premise to the Matrix movies. And I hope I didn't ruin that for you. You're hooked up to a computer. It's feeding you all these signals. You're really in some sort of coma, but you're experiencing everything exactly the way you are right now. You know what? There is no way to argue your way out of that. If someone really thought that, what would you do to try to convince them otherwise? No. See, here, let me tell you. There is no way to get out of it. And there has never been an argument in all of philosophy that will get you out of that problem. You can never argue your way out of the box. So, and the point there is, look, first of all, we do believe things without argument, and we're rational for doing so. Second, it's not just that we don't argue for these things. We can't. You can't argue for many of them. Okay, so remember, that was the first step. The first step was to see, look, are there ordinary things in life that we believe without argument? And we're still rational. Well, it looks like there are things for which you do not need evidence. If by evidence you mean argument. And typically that's almost the only kind of evidence you're going to get. When you're talking about evidence in these sorts of situations, when you're asking to justify a belief, it's an argument. Okay, so that's the first step. Now, the atheist could easily say this. Fine, okay, we believe things without argument. You still haven't shown me that has anything to do with belief in God. That's of a whole different matter. I mean, you're just talking about ordinary beliefs that everyone has. You know, since everyone comes hardwired with the same cognitive faculties and, you know, sense perception, memory, and all of that. But belief in God, come on. That's a totally different area. And so now we need to say, is there something similar about belief in God that or similar to our other ordinary beliefs? Well, I'm going to say yeah, and then I'm going to tell you why. What do all of those other memories, sense perception, reason have in common? What makes them rational? Well, here's what makes them rational. God has hardwired us with these cognitive faculties to work in a certain environment where they automatically produce reliable beliefs. Okay, so we're hardwired. Well, we have hardware and software, let's say, that allow us to believe in ordinary, important things instantly, automatically, with no arguments whatsoever. Huge blessing. That's why we're here. It's why we survived, why we could play baseball. It allows us to operate in this world. And we can point to, okay, there's some sort of memory faculty. I mean, cognitive science is new. Who knows? I mean, who knows how it's going to be fleshed out? But, you know, some sort of memory faculty, some sort of sense perception faculty, some sort of reasoning faculty, let's say. I mean, maybe they can't be compartmentalized. But there's something, some sort of faculty in your head, some cognitive faculty that works consistently. What if there was something very similar, but the beliefs that it produces, some sort of cognitive faculty that produces beliefs about God? So you have sense experience, right? You go around, you navigate the world, you come up to a tree, and you see the lights bouncing off of you. You're getting this sensory input. You automatically form the belief based on that input. The output is, hey, there's a tree there. It may be more complicated than that, you know, there's a fir tree or whatever, but there's a tree. What if there was something where you walk around you're navigating through the world and you have sensory input and other input, and automatically you believe there's a God, or I'm thankful to this God, or what? And we'll talk about some of the beliefs that might be formed. But what if there was a faculty like that? Well, let's see. Romans 1. Paul talks about being able to see, and he uses that metaphor. I mean, it's a metaphor, but it's still a powerful metaphor. See something of God in his creation, right? So where he says this, the wrath of God is being revealed from heaven against all the godlessness and wickedness of men who suppress the truth by their wickedness, since what may be known about God is plain to them because God has made it plain to them. For since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, his eternal power and divine nature, have been clearly seen, being understood from what has been made, so that people are without excuse. There's a lot obviously going on there, but the point that I want to focus on right now is just this. Look, it looks like Paul's saying something about, and this is how theologians have cashed this out. People like John Calvin, you've heard of him? Okay, I just want to make sure. John Calvin. So John Calvin referred to this kind of cognitive faculty as the sensus divinitatis. I had to use some Latin there. I just had to get that in. Sensus divinitatis, a sense of the divine. And basically, here's what it amounts to. Look, you interact with God's creation in all manner of ways, with people, with things, and you have all sort. It might not just be looking at the majestic mountains and saying, "Wow, that is, there has to be a designer," or "That's beautiful," or, and God is an amazing God for making that. And you get all kinds of stories of people having these sorts of experiences. Bam! They just believe. They automatically tend to believe in God from interacting with the world, seeing a newborn, a delicate. Actually, one of the things that has, especially since being an engineer, one of the things that amazes me all the time are bugs. Tiny, and the smaller, the crazier. I'll see these little bugs, and I'll think, could you imagine trying to make that? Like, I mean, I've tried to make things. You know, I've had, as an engineer, I had to make things. As a kid, I had to make things. Well, even as an adult, I make things with Legos with my kids, not by myself. My kids are just an excuse to give, hey, look what I got you for Christmas. So there's this, I mean, the intricacy of a tiny bug that can, it can navigate the its surroundings, find fuel. It's a little factory for producing new bugs. I mean, it can do all kinds of things. I mean, come on. There are just certain things that we see in the world that just go, boom, there's something going on here. And it's, and Paul's very clear that we're seeing aspects of the Creator. All right? So notice what we've done. And this is, this raises as many questions as it answers, but that's life. That's what we do. We're as we're driving down the road, we're progressively learning more. But then you also see down the road that there's more to learn. Hey, that's the way it goes. But what we've seen now, even if this raises questions, what we've done is we've seen, look, we can believe in God without an argument if we have this reliable cognitive faculty that we're hardwired with, that allows us, when we have input from the world, to form beliefs about God. And these could be, you know, it doesn't have to be just like God exists. You know, it could be something like, I'm really thankful to the Lord for this. And you just feel thankful to a being. I mean, this has happened throughout. I mean, you can read this in testimonies throughout history. But notice that's very similar to how we believe ordinary beliefs, like sense perception beliefs. So you have this kind of God faculty. I mean, that's kind of a cheap way of putting it. Sensus divinitatis sounds better. That allows you, when it's functioning properly, to automatically form beliefs about God. Now, this could be when you're, you know, and there's a lot to say about the types of beliefs that this would form. But if this is true, then there are times when you can be entirely rational, believing in God, without having even the hint of an argument. You don't have to be within even in the neighborhood of an argument, and you can still be rational. Okay? Now, the last thing, you know, there are a lot of objections. I know if I were an atheist, I'd have a lot of objections. Here's one. Okay. If there seems to be a very big difference between sense perception beliefs, you know, there's a tree in front of me or whatever. By the way, I'm not seeing a tree right now, just so you know. A pew in front of me. And belief in God. For one thing, just about everyone, if they were put in my position right now, would see the same exact thing and have the same exact belief. That there's a pew right there. But not everyone would have the same, put in my situation necessarily. Or, I mean, look, there are a lot of people who don't believe in God. This seems a little bit, I mean, that's a major difference, right? Everyone comes hardwired with the faculties for sense perception, but this cognitive faculty for God, no, there are a lot of people that don't have it. Well, here's one of the things that we pointed out was your cognitive faculties, like your senses and all of that, have to be operating in, they have to be operating correctly in the right environment. Here's the key right there is they can't be broken. But we know that when it comes to our beliefs about God, we're dramatically damaged. I mean, we're in the image of God, but our image, that image is severely damaged, and therefore our cognitive faculty, I mean, God would, you know, if there was no sin, if Adam hadn't fallen, most likely we'd have just, I mean, who knows what that would have been like, but it seems like we just automatically, you know, we believe in God just as easily as we believe in the pews here. But we're damaged. And we're damaged a lot of times when it comes to God. So there's that's one response to that. So notice what we've done. Let me just go through it again. The atheist says to you, you're irrational for not having a good argument for God's existence. And what they mean by that is, look, you don't have any support, you don't have any evidential support, you're irrational. Now, what did we do? We said, look, let's look at that. We saw that that meant they're asking for an argument. Well, and we saw, yeah, we don't have an argument. You know, we don't usually. I mean, some of us might have arguments for God's existence, but that's not why we believe usually. So there's something to that claim. And you start thinking, man, I better come up with some, I better have some answer here. And so we're trying to figure out, how is it that we actually believe? And it better be something that matches with Scripture and matches with our experience, right? And it's this. It's basically we have, just like we have cognitive faculties that help us to believe in ordinary things like trees and whatnot, we have something that is also allows us to automatically believe in God. The problem is that it's damaged. I mean, most people do believe in some sort. I mean, most people believe in some sort of God or something like that. Atheists are very much in the minority. That's neither here nor there. But it does, Calvin and even Aquinas. And when Calvin and Aquinas agree on something, you might want to take note. They say that, look, you can see this, even though that people are have wildly different views about whether there's a, you know, what kind of God it is or what, by and large, people have this belief in something else, something other than just the natural world. So anyways, that's one of the things. So when you're thinking about the, and when you read about an atheist who says, look, there aren't any good arguments, or you don't have any arguments and therefore you're irrational, you need to know, and our kids need to know, why it is they don't believe, typically by way of argument. And there's a good reason for it. The Lord's been very, very gracious to us and hardwired us in such a way so that we're, just like we can navigate through the world with sense perception, we have this cognitive faculty that Calvin calls the sensus divinitatis. So, now notice what I haven't said. I haven't said anything about, I haven't said that there are no good arguments. Okay, I'm just saying, look, you don't need to feel guilty if you don't have one. And you can understand why it is you still believe. So, I mean, there are all kinds of good arguments for God's existence. We can talk about those. Write down whatever questions you have. We can talk about those in the question and answer. But that's it for now. So that's the first, remember, that's the first, we've kind of dealt at least cursory, very briefly with the objection, belief in God is irrational. And then what we'll do for the next, the rest of the day, is talk about the second objection, which was science has shown that there is no God. Okay? Thank you.
We will take our first break, and we'll come back here in about 15 minutes. And remember, there's refreshments downstairs, so help yourself.